Springfield's Talk 104.1. Sarah's trying to connect us up. The publisher, I think there's some miscommunication. Our author of the week, the number that Sarah or that we were given from the publisher is to a non-English speaking individual. So apparently there's a miscommunication there. I gave her the number of the publisher, and she's trying to see if we can figure out what's going on. In the meantime, oh, I got plenty of stuff here. I'm not sure how many of you have been following the story of Pastor John MacArthur. This is the Grace Community Church pastor in California who has fought back against California's rules that say people cannot worship together in church. And one of his pushbacks, of course, you got that whole freedom of religion thing. But the fact that other gatherings of people have been allowed. And this, of course, is where a lot of folks, it's just a little too much for them. You know, they'll buy into, okay, you say in order for us all not to get sick and die, we can't have gatherings, fine. But then they see certain people are allowed gatherings. The unequal application of laws based on political beliefs or religious beliefs. And that's, for a lot of Americans, kind of what we're not supposed to be. This is one of the areas that we're supposed to be different than so many other countries, is that we're all equal under the law. And so when this unequal application is put upon folks, we've seen it in Springfield as well. Well, this one pastor is like, no. And so there have been some court battles back and forth, and judge here says, okay, they can have church. Another one says, no, they can't, and so forth. Well, he has said, we're going to do it. And the latest on that is a threat to arrest him if he does it. And he's saying, bring it on. If that's the way it's got to be, then just go ahead and bring it on. We do have our author of the week this morning. Now, ABC Books, North Glenstone, of course, is tremendously important to the station. We can't thank them enough, making it possible for us to have these author interviews every week. And we try to bring you some of interest. And every once in a while, we knock it out of the ballpark. Michael Anton, who's a lecturer and research fellow at Hillsdale College and also former national security official in the Trump administration, his book, The Stakes, America at the Point of No Return. I want to thank you so much for being with us. And I want to open up with you explaining how this election is different in the following. I know I have heard every 4 years for some time, this is the most important election of our lifetime, and we're hearing it once again. So is this the most important election of our lifetime, and how is it different than past elections?
Well, I think it is, and I also think some of these past elections, I mean, I think it's credible to talk about the 2016 election as having previously been the most important election of our lifetime, but the stakes have gone up since. If you look back on the 92, 96, 2000 election, in hindsight, they really weren't that important. You know, they didn't decide much. There wasn't much at stake in that election. Now we have, in addition to the fundamental trajectory of the country that has been, I think, off course for about 30 years, which the Trump presidency set about trying to redress in 2016, on top of that alone would make this election very important. On top of that, we have the economic shutdown and the woke riot. Lawlessness in the streets, the unwillingness or inability of government to do anything about it, or worse, the fact that in many locale zones in this country, the government only acts, only exercises its powers against lawful self-defense or against ordinary citizens going about their business. Oh, you don't have a mask on, you'll get arrested. You broke a shop window and burned the place down, you know, maybe you'll get arrested, and if you do, you'll be let go without charges. That's an inversion of the purpose of government. That is the exact opposite of what government exists to do and should be doing, and it can't. It's unsustainable and can't last. So, I think if the Democrats, who Biden will weakly condemn, weakly is in the sense of weak, the violence, but he won't name names, he won't call out the actual groups doing it because he knows they're all his supporters. You're going to get more of this. The same, I think Biden and Harris, you know, will be the same type of leadership that we have in certain states, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Minnesota, where governors, in Seattle, in Portland, Washington, Oregon, where governors are either too weak to do anything about these things, or they ideologically side with the people doing it, and so for ideological reasons, they don't want to do anything about it.
Yeah, you mentioned the inversion there, the purpose of government, and it was weeks ago when I saw a statement that I thought really summed that up, and it was regarding the McCloskeys, the couple in St. Louis who were defending their property. And of course, a lot of folks demonized them and portrayed them as being the problem. Someone noted, and I thought, man, this really sums it up, that this image, this is a sign of a failed government, locally speaking. That these people are having to do this because government has failed them when it comes to maintaining law and order on behalf of law-abiding citizens. And that, on a micro level, it seems to me is a bit of what you're saying.
It's worse than failure, though. Government fails to protect people from lawless violence, but then government acts when you try to defend yourself. According to the founders of the United States of America, everyone has natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Right? A natural right to life means you have a natural right, a God-given right to defend yourself. When the state persecutes you for executing your God-given right to defend yourself, the state is acting diametrically contrary to what the purpose of the state is, which is to exercise lawful power to defend life, liberty, property, and so on.
What I've noticed over time, I'm, early 40s, and I started paying attention to politics in the 90s. I was in high school, and getting into college in particular, it was kind of fun in the sense that you were challenged. And at that time, you to a large degree could still have these sort of political debates. And I remember having them. We would be invited to, I would be invited, and then somebody from like the Democrat, college Democrats would be invited to debate actual issues. You know, we would debate welfare reform. We would debate partial birth abortion and what the different parties were submitting, what the position was. And what has occurred, as I see it today, is while you do have on one side, Trump saying, hey, here are the things that we've done. These are the results. Here's more of what I want to do. Democrats, their basic campaign position is Republicans are bad. It's just demonizing. It isn't even talking about policy. It is just this segment of the population. These are bad, dangerous people that we need to take care of. And that is such a profound shift, in my opinion, and one that is, it's on the verge of being very dangerous, because you are demonizing an entire segment of the population, not the policies, but the people themselves. Are you there? Do we still have you? Do we lose our author?
Yes, I think. We're well past the point of it being on the verge of dangerous. It's already very dangerous. Look, my book is entitled The Stakes, and people ask me, well, what are the stakes? I think the stakes are, will we still have liberty after this election? And potentially, will we still have civilization after this election? So I thought in 2016 that the stakes of that election were that a Hillary Clinton victory would mean permanent blue state, one-party politics from coast to coast. That the deck would be, has already been being stacked for a long time, but then it would be so stacked that the Republicans would never have a chance of winning again. And you'd get what you have in my home state, or at least my former home state where I grew up, of California, where it's a one-party state. There's no opposition. Republicans don't matter. They exist. They live in the state by the millions, but they're so outnumbered that it doesn't matter what they vote for or vote against. They lose every time. If we were to have that coast to coast and the left could then implement its entire program, imagine what the United States would be like. The reaction to Donald Trump from the left, the so-called resistance, et cetera, they call themselves, has been exactly what you described, a refusal from the beginning to concede that the 2016 election was legitimate, that his supporters have legitimate concerns and even grievances, a willingness to use any means of power, from investigations to illicit campaign surveillance and surveillance of the president's aides, manipulation of the legal process to go after people, to use any means at their disposal to make sure that this president can't succeed, and even to drive him out of office early. I think that's only going to intensify come this November. It's gotten hard to imagine the Democrats accepting a second Trump victory, especially when we've seen them openly talking about, using the military to, quote unquote, drag him out of the White House in January. We've heard Hillary Clinton say something I think extremely alarming. She has said that Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstances. Circumstances. That would include, if I understand the word any to mean what I think it means, a Trump win, that Joe Biden should not concede. So this is all very chilling, and it should trouble everyone.
We're talking with our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books, Michael Anton. The book is The Stakes, America at the Point of No Return. You write about the divided Republican Party and the lack of apparent understanding of what they and what we as Americans are up against with these forces on the left. And while so many people, we keep talking about how important this election is and the danger of President Trump not winning again, but we don't seem to be looking beyond that. And I fear what happens, in 4 years, if he doesn't get elected, and, will we have a Republican who gets it? Or are we going to go, back? I don't know. I just worry about that. Like, when Trump's gone, what are we going to be facing? What concerns should we have there?
Two things. I think, the first of all, if we don't win the 2020 election and they get in there and they make Puerto Rico a state and they make D.C. a state and they amnesty 22 million illegal aliens who are then eligible to bring over, up to, 2, 3, 4 family members, and the population of the country very swiftly changes in 4 years, all with an eye toward tipping purple states blue and red states purple. Demographically, on the electoral map, will just be impossible for Republicans. So it won't really matter what the Republican Party looks like if that were to happen. That said, there is a war going on in the souls of the Republican Party, essentially between those who want to go back in time to 1985 and recreate Ronald Reagan's party, the low-tax, low-regulation party. Now, I don't have anything against the Ronald Reagan Republican Party, except to say that it designed its solutions for the 1980s, and we now live in the 2020s. And a party that is with it, that wants to actually address the real problems of today, needs a new agenda. And President Trump has brought it that new agenda, but it's being mightily resisted by elements within the party who want to see the old style return. And then the final thing I would say is the Republican Party is going to have, if it wants to remain relevant, it's going to have to change, because it gets its votes now and has actually for some time been getting its votes primarily from a different cohort within the electorate. It gets its votes much more from traditional Democratic constituencies like blue-collar workers, private sector union members, the non-college educated, and so on. And a party that only can talk about tax cuts and helping out big business, as shorthand, let's say, a kind of country club / chamber of commerce Republican Party, will not long appeal in wide numbers to, voters in the heartland and in the Rust Belt and in the red states.
Well, and I think those entities that you listed anecdotally aren't even really traditional Republican anyhow. I know the Chamber of Commerce here in Springfield, I mean, I don't think they've ever seen a tax increase that they didn't endorse and support, or an expansion of government. And it's interesting, the country club being the sort of characterization of the wealthy. I mean, the wealthy really, or at least the uber wealthy, the voices that we hear and we recognize, I mean, they're almost solidly leftist now. And so that idea that many of us, go ahead.
That's something that Republicans have, and conservatives have had a difficult time catching on to, that the Democrats are the party of the super rich, the super powerful, and the super connected. The Republicans still think, well, if you have money, you must be against regulation. You must want a tax cut. You must want the government to stay off your back, and you want liberty and freedom. If that were true, then Silicon Valley would be monolithically Republican, but it isn't. It's monolithically liberal and democratic, and it in fact uses its monopoly power over information flows to censor Republicans and conservatives. All of this I describe in the book, the stakes, the way the not just the electorate, but the structure of society has really changed fundamentally since the Reagan era in the 1980s, and conservatives haven't caught up or caught on.
Author of the Week, Michael Anton, The Stakes, America at the Point of No Return. I really appreciate your time this morning. Very valuable book, and it helps bring into focus for people that feeling that they have, but really understanding why it is there and the dangers of it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. We're going to take a break. We'll roll straight into traffic and then go on and get news with Don Luzader and continue on this morning. I'm Nick Reed.